Good morning, KVPS. I'm Elias, live from the studio, welcoming Commissioner Dan Ryan.
Hey, nice to see you, Elias.
I'm glad to have you here. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
All right, let me get the questions ready.
All good. Good morning, Benson High School.
You went to Roosevelt, right?
Graduated? I did.
And what year?
Really? Okay, 1980. That's when I graduated. I was there in the late 70s.
As a Roosevelt graduate, how has Portland Public Schools and the city changed since you graduated?
Oh, that's a big question. I think the soul of our city and PPS is there, and it's never really, it just keeps deepening. I think that I've seen my hometown, and I haven't lived here the whole time since high school. I went away from 18 to age 35, and when I came back because I missed the vibe of Portland. Mm-hmm. I liked that it was always there for artists. It was always there for creative, like, food, so I wasn't surprised we had the food revolution, if you will, that took off. I was at Roosevelt when the Vietnamese refugees were coming to the country, and so that was the feeder school for Vietnamese and Laotian community. So I was at Roosevelt when you could see that our city was becoming more multicultural. Even though we've had a lot of gentrification, which has really dismantled, I'd say, the African-American community in particular, mm-hmm. we've also seen an influx of other cultures coming in. So I think that Portland is definitely more racially diverse in general, just more multiculti, and definitely more global. I just wish the Blazers would have won another championship. First time I skipped school was in 1977, my freshman year, and I told my mom I had to go to the victory parade because that was the one year we won the championship. So I hope that you too can skip school someday to go see a Blazer championship parade.
I think I've skipped enough already.
Elias admitting his ills his senior year. Love it. Okay.
And as a former PPS student, as a city, or as Portland itself, the city doesn't exactly focus on certain things. They'll focus on other.
And yeah, like the school board has the governance responsibility
like
the PPS.
Doesn't always focus on schools, house, and stuff. So as a former PPS student and on the council, what role should the city play in helping the schools and PPS?
So I was a former student at PPS, mm-hmm. like we just established. I was also on the school board in 2005 to 2008. And now I'm on the city council. And the school community, it's such the bedrock of Portland. So as a city council member, you always have to be cognizant of making policy and being a good partner with our schools. And we have more than one school district in the city of Portland. I think you might know that, just east of here, because we're at the Benson at Marshall campus, right? East of here is David Douglas, Park Rose, and Reynolds, and Centennial. And they're all part of the city of Portland as well. And so I think that in my role, both on the city council, I remind people of that we're a much more than just one school district. This is the largest school district, but we have five. And that's our future. I always said that when we focused at All Hands Raised on birth to career, it's because you're our long-term economic plan. Like if we don't stimulate students to be engaged in Portland while they're students, they're probably not going to come back like I did. I mean, the reason I came back is because obviously I probably had a pretty good time in my K through 12 years. And I wanted to be, when I turned 35, I wanted to be a part of, you know, being a grown-up here, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I came back. Yeah.
And how long did you serve on the board?
I was on the board for one term. Actually, I just a little shy of one term because I was asked to be the CEO of the Portland Schools Foundation, and it would have been a conflict of interest to be on the board and focus on getting private money for the school district.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to go into mental health.
Oh, God, let's pivot to mental health.
Now, from what I've heard, the city doesn't traditionally play a role in the delivering or paying for health care. So what role should the city play or when it comes to mental health?
Well, we have to stop blaming which jurisdiction does what, yet we have to accept that we have certain charters. So PPS does mental health. Mm-hmm. The county does mental health. Every family should be doing mental health. So because I have an opportunity to be on radio stations with people like Elias, it's my job to lift it up. Because it's a stigma that shouldn't exist. It's it's everyone's challenged by mental health issues, just like we're challenged by healthcare issues that are non-brain related. But the brain's obviously the computer of the body, and it's a big deal. And for too many decades, society has shamed it and stigmatized it, so we don't talk about it enough. I do think that the COVID, impacts of COVID have brought it a little bit higher, thank goodness, because a lot of us are challenged with what we experienced. It's not normal to be isolated inside. It's not normal to do education by looking at a green dot on your screen or having your screen off all day, which is really absurd. So, you know, we need connection. Human beings need connection. And when you stop receiving that, everyone's was challenged with some mental health episodes. I haven't met one person that hasn't had some mental health challenges over the last 2 years. And so I think one of the most important things we can do as leaders is just talk about it. And then the other part is, as a state, we're like in last place in terms of providing services. Mm-hmm. So, and if you break it down into behavioral health, which is addictions, and there's a lot of chicken and egg that way. For example, my brother, who died on our streets as a homeless person, it was really because of mental health untreated and addictions untreated. But many people with mental health issues, there are a few wires are just different, which usually makes them brilliant if they're treated. And so if you treat, but if they're not getting the treatment or they're refusing it, they usually resort to street drugs because they want to feel better. And so that's the dual diagnosis part. And we have the highest number of untreated addicts in our state with the fewest number of treatment facilities. That's a horrible equation. So I'm counting on your generation to really keep telling the truth about this, because you're all way more honest, I think, about mental health than previous generations. And so we're going to need your leadership to keep blowing the whistle on this and innovating. And it doesn't have to be perfect, but we have to start doing something. So, and a lot of it's peer-to-peer. The 12-step movement's really been solid in terms of providing a lot of resources.
Do you mind explaining the 12-step movement?
Yeah, 12 steps are, like, most famous is AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's peers helping peers. So that model is where somebody's been sober, say, for 5 years, and then they become a sponsor to help people move through the steps process so that they could stay sober one day at a time. I haven't met anyone that doesn't agree that it's best to do life one day at a time. Mm-hmm. I think if you future trip, it's not good for your brain. If you regret something you did yesterday, get over it. It's about being present today, like me being present in my conversation with you. That's called doing life right.
And in Portland, there are currently over 4,000 homeless and rising, with around 2,000 unsheltered. How do you plan to help these people? Because with mental health, a lot of homeless people aren't able to find jobs or take care of themselves.
Yeah. So first of all, those numbers are probably low. The last time they did a count was maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that it's about bringing services to where people are. So I've been leading the effort in the city and the county to bring mental health and behavioral services to the ground, doing outreach, doing assessments of who's actually homeless, who are they? And what's their conditions? What's keeping them from moving on and having a better life? And we don't have enough outreach workers doing that type of work. The village concept that I promoted and we're building right now is about having anywhere from 45 to 60 people in a restorative setting with a lovely fence surrounding it that's, you know, painted by...
So it's on community, basically.
It's community-based, and it's bringing mental health and behavioral health services to those people who are homeless and assessing how they're doing for 6 to 9 months. So when they move into housing, they'll move into the right housing that will give them a better shot to be successful. And you want to build their workforce resilience. I think they're going to be our best employees mm-hmm. to serve people who are homeless because they have that lived experience. And then my hope is that they get the mental health, behavioral health services they need, if that's what they need, the shelter that they need, the housing they need, so they can become, they can build their resilience and be helpful to society. Those are the service people we need in this sector, if you will.
From what I found, in 2021, the median home price in Portland increased about more than 15%, with the average Portland home costing around $550,000. And apartments and lofts are over $1,500. What is your plan for affordable housing to help those?
Yeah, I wish I could wave a wand and say stop, you know, this is too high, because it is. The fact is, we have a supply challenge. Mm-hmm. Portland has a fewer amount of vacancies in housing, and supply does impact demand. Hello, all you economy students, you know that. So we have to have more supply of housing, first of all. And two, and it's going to take public and private partnerships to get us out of this as well. The Housing Bureau is in charge of building affordable housing from the bond that the voters passed, and we're establishing a lot of new units just this next year. And so our job is to make sure that those who attain the housing actually are successful in housing and help them build their resilience, just kind of like with the homeless population. And there's a chicken and egg here, it's connected. So we also have a lot of people who are insecure with housing because of the equation you just presented, how expensive it is, and we want to make sure that we're preventing those people from becoming homeless. And if they do, we have to quickly get them services so they're not homeless too long. Once someone's homeless for more than 2 years, it usually accelerates their mental health and behavioral health challenges.
Due to isolation,
which makes sense. I mean, I think I haven't talked to anyone that if you were homeless for 3 months, you'd probably resort to something that you never thought you would just to survive. So it's easy to have empathy for what goes on.
And because of the pandemic, our community's needs have grown significantly. Schools are struggling, housing is in critical condition, and climate change is rising. Realistically, how many areas of community can the city be involved in at the moment?
Wow, so you're telling me we need to focus and we have all these problems. Mm-hmm. And where are we going to focus on?
Yep.
All right. Man, that was a hard ball, Elias. I think that it's our job to spread the field. I don't know who's played sports there, but you know, when you remember played soccer when you were a little kid, and everyone would follow the ball, like everyone. And as you evolved in whatever sport, you spread the field and get things done. That's what we have to do as leaders as well. So, like, I'm on point for working with the county to make our homeless continuum from going from streets to stability way better than it is today. I'm also focused on permitting in the city, but. But I had the responsibility of a big decision that's related to climate justice, and that was the Zenith oversees the infrastructure for fossil fuel development, and it's located over across the St. John's Bridge in the Linton area, and they wanted to expand their infrastructure to do more fossil fuel development. And the bureau that I oversee, all the codes said we couldn't deny it, but we're at a place where we have to be bold. And so I worked with the government affairs office, the tribal affairs office, because they're the original holders of this land. They have the wisdom. If we would just listen to the Native American community, we wouldn't be in this mess when it comes to climate. And so we leaned into them, and we wrote up a case to say that we're denying further infrastructure from Zenith. Well, of course, we'll be sued. But that's where this stuff has to go. It has to go to the courts. It's a justice issue. And we got to be bold, and we got to fight, because I have a lot of people in my life that are your age. And it's my job now as an elder to make decisions always 7 years, seven generations beyond me. And climate is obviously the front and center issue on that. So no one can remove themselves from issues around climate, nor in terms of issues around racial justice.
Thank you. Students today at PPS are worried about what the future looks like. They're not very optimistic about their future. What can you, as part of the City Council, do to improve the fortunes of the coming generation of adults?
I paused because there's a moment of, you know, sadness when you hear that, and I hear that from other youth in my life. And I just want you to continue to speak up, and I want you also to be present for today. And what I mean by that is, we need you, and we need you to actually be a positive and be a force of change and work with us. And just know that you are the strongest voice on climate justice. I find that youth are a really strong voice on mental health, like you brought up earlier. I think your generation is way more honest about conditions. You see it with your own eyes at a much younger age than, say, previous generations. And so I just want to make sure that we work together. And my job is to, leadership takes some optimism. Mm-hmm. So we need leaders from your generation. And and we need you to also, like, see a solution and get behind it.
Yes, thank you. As a student, I've always wanted to get into politics. Do you have any advice on anyone who wants to get into that area?
Oh, you're brave. I would say, I had fits and starts with politics. I you know, was on the school board, and I'm in this job now, but I've always was civically engaged. And so I think what's more important is that you get involved with your areas of interest, you do the work on the ground, you take leadership, you spend your, someone broke it down like this for me. There's like 3 8-hour segments in a day, right? Mm-hmm. 8 should be self-care and sleep. 8 should be, usually is like school or work. But you have that other eight. What are you going to do with that? And that other eight is where you have an opportunity to be a person of service to your community. So pick something, do it, and learn from it. And then your life just keeps building upon each experience. So when you run for office, you have real lived experience of doing something. Because when you're at this level, it helps when you've actually done something, where you've managed things, where you've been involved as a volunteer for a while. So then when you're in this job where you're doing policy at a much higher elevation, you have that sense and lived experience. So just get active.
Well, thank you, but that's all the time we have for today.
Wow, it went so fast, Elias. All right, Benson, good to be here. Thanks.
Let's give the Mr. a round of applause.
Thank you for listening.